Welcome to episode 5 of Vital Voices, the podcast where we explore the heart of health and wellness with expert insights and meaningful conversations. I'm your host, Alexis Burrows, and today we are diving into an important topic in women's mental health. Joining us are two esteemed psychiatrists, first Dr. Davina Knowles Robinson, who is a psychiatrist at the Oaktree Medical Center and a senior registrar at Sandilands Rehabilitation Center, and Dr. Tamika Johnson-Dames is also a psychiatrist at Oaktree Medical Center and a senior registrar at Sandilands Rehabilitation Center. Welcome to the show, ladies.
Thanks for having us.
So you guys are here to discuss postpartum depression, premenstrual dysphoric disorder, and the ways hormonal changes during the menstrual cycle can impact women's energy. Whether you're a woman navigating these challenges, a loved one looking to offer support, or just curious to learn more, this episode is for you. So grab your headphones and let's get started. So I like to start these conversations with background, because I think it's important for people to understand, you know, why and how you get into the space that you are. So this question is for both of you. You know, give us a little bit of background, what got you into medicine in the first place, and then what kind of led you into the space of psychiatry, because it's a very interesting and sometimes misunderstood field. So kind of give our audience some idea of who you are and what got you here.
So I'll start off first. I'm Dr. Davina Knowles Robinson. I know through the pod, you guys are going to get confused because we kind of sound alike and very similar.
Maybe.
So just bear with us. But for me personally, not just being a woman, obviously, but psychiatry wasn't at the forefront of my mind. Honestly, when I entered the profession, I wanted to be an oncologist. But going through med school and going through internship, I figured that this would be something that could help the community. There's too much stigma and not enough representation for mental health specifically. But for women, that's even more underserved than mental health on its own. So that has definitely been a passion project, per se, for me. Going through my own challenges, too, as a woman, specifically in the area of women's health and having a child, it can be very traumatic. And so this is definitely why I kind of segued into this area as well.
Right. And this is Dr. Tamika Johnson-Dames. So similar to Davina, initially, I did not think about psychiatry. I actually wanted to be an obstetrician gynecologist. And Davina was actually closer to that step than I was.
It was.
And she later decided, you know what, I want to do psychiatry as well. I think she tried to follow me, but that's another topic.
Definitely not.
But currently, I do work on the female section of Sandilands. And I come face-to-face with women's mental health issues all of the time, specifically those in the postpartum period, those in the period before even thinking about having a child and what that means for you mentally, physically, and emotionally. And so I think with both of us being moms, we do share an additional tidbit of, you know, insight into some of the challenges that women face. So it's helpful to have a space where we could have these conversations and offer advice and support.
So what got you interested in women's mental health in particular? Because obviously you work specifically on that side in SRC. So what got you interested in that area? Outside of just being a woman, because obviously there's that connection point.
So like I said, I initially wanted to do obstetrics anyway. And so I'm actually considering a subspecialty in antenatal psychiatry. And I think in terms of me going into the area, I was placed there. But it worked out. It worked out in any event.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's get into the discussion around postpartum depression, because I think before we got started, Davina mentioned something about, you know, the idea that a lot of these things exist on the spectrum, right? So, you know, people will say, you know, I had postpartum, and then everybody would say me too. But like, where does postpartum depression as a diagnosis differ from, you know, just the baby blues? Because, you know, you come out of having had a baby and there's a lot of life changes and all those things that happen. And there's that generalized idea of, well, I'm just a little bit down because I'm figuring out life. And then there's the depression part of it. So where does that, how does that spectrum work out, and what is the difference?
So I like to say that psychiatry is an umbrella, right? And there are several other prongs to the umbrella to make it a whole thing. Mm-hmm. And so for women's health, and specifically surrounding pregnancy, There is peripartum, meaning like during or like prepartum, so before, mm-hmm. and then postpartum after, right? Having the baby.
Right.
And so the whole encompassing thing about it is that when you have this new developing thing inside you, there are places within that spectrum that it can fall. Mm-hmm. So the mood doesn't just come after the delivery. Right. These symptoms can be seen before even having the baby. Mm-hmm. So that's the whole mood and anxiety disorder spectrum that comes with pregnancy. Mm-hmm. So you asked specifically about depression and baby blues. Baby blues can be experienced from 80% of women. And so that's a very high number if you're considering mm-hmm. the amount of people that have children, and to not even talk about it and discuss it, because I think even in our community, we say that it's just normal. And this is something that you go through, and that's a part of being a woman. And I don't think that that is fair, because we're the body's going through so many different hormonal changes. And so in that, the symptoms seem a bit less, you know, sadness, not feeling themselves, mm-hmm. those type of things that can be seen after pregnancy, after having the baby. And then you have depression, which is more 10 to 15% of women okay. that experience that. And so there's a spectrum of the same symptoms that you would see in depression: changes in sleep, changes in appetite, changes in energy, concentration, their mood, their interest, hopelessness. And when it becomes very severe, we're talking about things like harming self, harming the baby. And so those are like the red flags that you're looking for. So it's very important. So Tamika spoke about obstetrics. When they go to their postpartum checks, mm-hmm. getting screeners done. And I don't feel like that is even done enough.
Right.
Yeah.
So we do see quite a few referrals from obstetricians that have women that are potentially suffering from postpartum depression. Mm-hmm. And as Davina mentioned, there are some persons that have baby blues and they do feel a bit down, but it doesn't significantly impact the ability to function, care for yourself or care for your baby.
Right.
So when you look at postpartum depression and even postpartum psychosis, then you get concerned about the woman's well-being. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I know that this is your child and that everybody believes that the child and the mother needs to be together, but someone that is now psychotic, they're not concerned about their child. They can't even care for themselves. So early intervention is definitely key. And then there's this whole thing about being anxious. I know for one, and a lot of women can attest to this, when that baby is sleeping, every 2 seconds you up looking to make sure the baby breathing. So you're not sleeping. For women that want to breastfeed, you're breastfeeding, you might be pumping. And then by the time you're done washing out the pump parts, it's time to sleep, but by the time you lay down to sleep, the baby's awake again, so you're not sleeping. So the insomnia that is typical in depression is also something that happens because you just don't have enough hours in the day to sleep. Is the baby always up? The baby always needs something.
And our community loves to say sleeping, the baby's sleeping. How?
Right.
I have other things to do. And so that's where the community comes in too. Mm-hmm. People checking in, making right. sure that this person is well.
Right.
So I'm going to ask you a question. Feel free not to answer, because you both obviously have had children. You mentioned that it's not something that you think is often done. Did you get the screener after you had, did either of you?
So this is a part of when I my introduction, where I said my experience was very traumatic having a child. I had my child in the States, and without sounding too off topic, I had the Black woman experience in America.
Oh boy.
So I did not get the screeners after either, but I did. I had a very traumatic delivery. So through that whole experience, it was a disservice. And I don't think that, hindsight being 2020, my child is going to be 6 tomorrow. And so with that, the thought of getting the proper education as a layperson, if I were a layperson, I did not receive.
Right.
So I can't speak to the community here. And I think, like Dr. Dame said, we do get a lot of referrals from our OBGYNs here.
Mm-hmm.
So I tip my hat to them, and those that are doing it, kudos to you, but definitely there can be more done for our community.
Fair enough. So, you know, are there any specific risk factors or segments of the population that are more vulnerable or more susceptible to getting postpartum depression from others?
Definitely. So for starters, if you are someone that has had an experience with major depression in the past or had a depressive episode in the past, you're definitely at risk. Someone that has had anxiety or generalized anxiety before. If you do not have support, because can I tell you, I tip my hats to single mothers that don't have support because I honestly don't know how they do it. When I had a baby, my mommy told me that she was taking 2 weeks vacation and I chuckled because I'm like, who having this baby and why do you need time? Mm-hmm. But after the baby came, I realized how critical it was to have the extra hands on deck because it is stressful. If you are someone that has had a pregnancy that was filled with a lot of psychosocial stresses, whether it be financial, whether it be problems with the father of the child not accepting that you're pregnant, whether it be medical issues. Mm-hmm. So all of the things that contribute to increased stress, increased burden on the mother, put you at risk for postpartum depression. And Davina, you can add to that.
I think you covered the gist of it. Like, that was a very good synopsis. And I mean, genetic factors, mm-hmm. having a parent or mother that went through depression, the time of year that you have it. So some people experience seasonal depression as well. So if you're in a climate, I mean, it doesn't bode hair, but right? But if you live in some place like Canada where, like, you know, and the time change. Like, so now it's nighttime at
5 o'clock.
2 o'clock. It's like 10:30 already. So it's like those different factors can, you know, contribute. And so having the predisposition of already having a mental illness also, you know, contribute.
Yeah, listen, I looked at my wife last night and it was 9 o'clock and it was like it was 1 o'clock at the same time. It was 1 a.m. The time change is a killer, man. So yeah, I imagine, like you said, that may play a part in it as well. How do hormonal changes after childbirth play a role in postpartum depression? Does that contribute to it at all? Is it a non-factor?
It definitely does. So after childbirth, women experience a significant set of hormonal fluctuations. The estrogen and the progesterone levels specifically. These changes influence mood regulation, the transmitters in the brain. Like, I don't want to get too, like, you know, technical and scientific, but I mean, the hormones that are produced naturally in the body, people know about estrogen and progesterone. Those are more common to women. And when these fluctuate, they contribute, and there's research that shows that this influences depression. So even persons, when they're on their menstrual cycle, I'm pretty sure women can relate to this when they say they have PMDD, where they're experiencing, you know, PMS, what we like to say, right? Where they're having these low moods with their period. So when you're thinking about this woman has not had that for 9 months, and she's having the surge of hormones because of the baby, all these hormonal changes play a role in how this person is feeling, their mood, their regulation, et cetera.
Okay. And then when we look at hormones, like Davina said, these hormones directly impact the neurotransmitters in the brain that are responsible for mood regulation. Mm-hmm. So in psychiatry, we learn a lot, you know, in the early stages about dopamine, about serotonin, mm-hmm. and the role that they play in your mood and how you feel. We know serotonin to be the happy molecule. Mm-hmm. And so when you have changes in estrogen levels, that then ultimately affects the amount of those neurotransmitters in your brain. So it's a biological thing. It's a chemical thing that takes place when women experience these mood changes. It's not a matter of you being weak, you being just too stressed out. Like, your brain literally responds to what's happening in your life and in your body.
What are some common misconceptions that people have about postpartum depression, and how does that impact women, even deciding to seek care?
So with postpartum depression and baby blues, they feel like they're synonymous, mm-hmm. and that's not true. And they feel, like I said earlier, that it's normal. Like, you're supposed to go through these feelings and changes because that's a part of pregnancy. And I think that relates to stigma. A very big misconception in general on mental health, where we put mental health in this box of this is how things are supposed to be. And if you feel this way, you tuck it away, you put it under your pillow, and you just cry about it and let it go and function as normal tomorrow. Right. But this stigma prevents women from getting help. So the amount of women that need to see somebody, talk to somebody, get professional help, that's the misconception, right? Because now they are feeling judged early. They feel guilty about getting the help. They have fear about people judging them because they're unable to cope with this new stressor. I'm a bad mom because I'm seeking help. No, you're a better mom because you're getting the best help that you can get for yourself and your baby.
And I think too, sometimes if we're being realistic, because though I'm a healthcare professional and I try my best to say, well, you know, this is what needs to happen. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you take a step back and you look at everyone's individual situation. So you have a mom that's just had a baby that may be having signs and symptoms of postpartum depression. Mm-hmm. And then she tells you, well, it's raining. I don't have a car. I don't have anyone to watch the baby. So if I'm coming to see you, I need to be able to bring the baby. So then I have to pack up the baby. I'm tired. I haven't had a bath. So there's a lot that goes into even seeking help.
Yeah. That's also very true. Like, I have an actual story about that because we do offer virtual sessions as well. Mm-hmm. But the thing about it is, if your triggering environment is your home, me making it more accessible to you is not helping the situation either.
Right.
So that in mind, having the ability to now leave your newborn child home too, who is your caregiver? This is something that's already adding the burden of stress to you.
That I don't have the support.
So I don't have the support. I don't have the ability to get there. My car may be down, this, that, and the third. Mm-hmm. I don't have the finances maybe either to seek help.
Right.
So like all of these contribute to the woman feeling the way that they do and the pressure to just kind of hold it in, repress and regress.
Suck it up.
Yeah, because I guess it's hard to talk about to even have the conversation if you are still sitting squarely in the environment that is triggering the issues or some of the issues to begin with. So let's move into talking about the treatment side of it, right? So obviously there are a lot of different components of, you know, what it might look like, what some of the symptoms and the signs may be. But what does treatment or intervention look like for postpartum depression? And whether that be therapy, whether that be medication, like what are some of the options that are available? And then how do you manage that with the idea of, you know, well, am I doing what's best for the baby or is this me being me? Because, you know, we do have that stigma, like you say.
Right. So we use the umbrella approach for the whole of psychiatry, mm-hmm. right? And so we use this term called the biopsychosocial model, right?
Okay.
So the biological model of it is, or the biological component of it, mm-hmm. is the pharmaceutical, so the medications.
Mm-hmm.
I know our population, we hate to take pills, right? And I'm not somebody that pushes it either. Like, we have a conversation. If you come into the office, it's going to be a conversation. What do you feel is best for you? Where are you going to be compliant? Where do you think that, where is your trajectory? And we build on that. Tell you about the possible benefits and the harms of it. So medication is always on the table. Dr. James mentioned, serotonin. So things that influence serotonin would be kind of the gold standard.
Mm-hmm.
Then the psychological mode of it is talk therapy or psychological intervention. So that's like talk therapy, CBT, where you're trying to change the framework of this person's thoughts, feelings, and trying to regulate it from that aspect.
Mm-hmm.
And then the social, garnering the support. So your community, whether it be social services, because we don't take that important enough too, because if we're talking about single mothers that aren't in a more financial area, that is a very big component. If we're talking about things like the father, the parents, the mothers, the person that just had the baby, the church community, we claim to be a very big Christian community. How is the church lending a hand and not just saying we're praying for this person, but garnering that social support, that network to give this woman what she needs as well? So finding your community, finding your friend circle, having these type of platforms that give information is always important in giving treatment.
Just for our listeners who may not be aware, I know you mentioned CBT. Can you just kind of give a quick disclaimer as to what that is?
So that's cognitive behavioral therapy. And so the cognitive part is what we're saying, changing the framework of the mind.
Mm-hmm.
So changing those negative thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
It's all gloom and doom. Nothing's going to work out. Why are things happening to me? The baby's now jaundiced. So now using these things and trying to change the framework. So yes, the baby is jaundiced, but now what am I doing? Like, how can I, is it all gloom and doom? What is the silver lining here? So changing the framework of how they're thinking. Behavioral is now putting those things into kind of action. So giving you the things that we can do to change how you're doing. So maybe setting a sleep schedule, maybe it might be, or in terms of washing the bottles, that's something I definitely hated doing. So putting that on a schedule, maybe pump I don't need parts. Right, the pump parts. Do I now separate them at 8 o'clock as opposed to doing it after every time that I pump? So that you have a schedule in mind, so now that I could sleep a little bit better. So now changing your behaviors. And so putting those together is CBT, essentially.
Listen, when we had both kids, we went hard on having just a ton of bottles. Because we learned very early with my daughter, it was like, okay, who has the energy to get into like bottle cleaning after every bottle? And so, listen, there's all kind of little things. That's a little sidebar. But yeah, that...
Oh, boy. Definitely. I have painful memories of pump parts and bottle washing. Like,
so when people talk about getting the bottles that have all the inserts and stuff, I said, no,
absolutely not. And she called like nipples. That's it.
So I'm not giving them an extra. I'm not doing it. At one point when I started pumping, I was like, okay, after I pump, I need to go and clean and sterilize everything. After a while, no, try not taking the fridge. You know, as a physician, I should not be encouraging people to follow things online. Of course, you have to do your own research and make sure it's safe. But you have to keep your mind together because I was losing it.
My life hack after a while, too, with if you're making a bottle, something like so where you don't have to reheat like the milk and all the baby drinks the lukewarm water. So just as it comes out to room temperature, you can give it. You don't need to heat the bottle up. Mm-hmm. Let the baby drink the milk just like that.
Because then you heat it up and then it's too hot.
Yeah. No, get it to room temperature.
Yep.
Life hack.
And her baby is 6. My baby is about to be 3. And I learned that from her. In my time, she's like, yeah, no, room temperature. There's no heating. I said, oh, okay.
Saves you time, energy, and mental space. Trust me.
Sure did.
Okay, so obviously one of the most critical parts of this conversation around postpartum depression is how can partners, families, communities support mothers experiencing postpartum depression? You mentioned obviously ways that the church can get involved, things like that. But what are some avenues and how? Because you know, if you're someone on the other side of it, you're also now coping with your spouse or your partner going through this, but then you're also trying to support them. So how do you advise people and navigate?
So let's work from within and then go out.
Okay.
So for persons that are married in a relationship and you have your partner there, sometimes it is quite easy to say, especially for a woman that's breastfeeding, which is another topic for another day. But sometimes it's easy to say that, okay, well, you're the only one that can feed the baby. So I mean, okay, while you do that, I'm going to just have a sleep. But in the meantime, while I'm feeding the baby, you can get up and you can wash the pump parts. You can get up. You can ask me if I want some food to eat. After I'm done breastfeeding, you can offer to burp the baby. So there are things that you can do to lend a hand so that the woman doesn't feel alone. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you find that after having a kid, people would call and they would say, oh, let me see the baby. Send me a picture. Send me a video.
You don't exist.
So I'm not even that you don't exist, you know. Sometimes the support has to be a little bit more tangible. Hey, I'm going to the food store. Send me your list so that I can get you the things. Right. It may not be that you have to offer to pay for something for someone, you know. They can give you the money if you don't have it. But doing things like that, and sometimes people say, well, you know, if they had asked me, I would have done it. People that are stressed are not going to think to ask. No. They don't know what they need. They don't know if they're going or they're coming. So sometimes offering support in a tangible way is important.
And then it might be stressful to ask and then someone just be like, well, I can't really help you.
Right.
Like, even if it's just the physical part of it, not necessarily paying for the groceries, but it's just the idea. So I imagine it's also this fear of, I don't want to ask anybody anything because if I'm already feeling down and then somebody kind of says no, then it only adds to the negative feelings.
Correct.
For sure. And like she said, being very intentional. So if you're saying, well, how's the baby? Why don't you come for an hour to let me get some sleep? Even if you're not, and I feel like we both did it for each other. Like if there was a time where I was like, you know what? I will take a mirror. You go in the room and you go to sleep. Even if I'm watching him sleep, just so that she knows that someone is in the home, that I don't have to do something for the next 2 hours. Right. And I'm okay with that. Yeah. So just being intentional, not just saying, well, hey, you know what? Checking in, that's great and that's fine, but hands-on work can also be very helpful.
And we both had kids during our residency.
studying with a baby, a newborn.
It was a crazy.
Kyle was literally in the, rocker, helping us study, because it was just like, here you are. Amir was in the rocker, year three, helping us study. So it's just like navigating that space as a mom. Like, yes, the community is there, but your village is very, very important.
So I imagine, you know, the experience as being a mom in such a stressful professional space like medicine, I imagine that adds a whole different level of it, because now you've gone to residency, you've done rotations in ONG, you've done rotations in pediatrics. So now it's like, as you go through the pregnancy, it's like, is it this, is it that, is something going on? And then the baby comes on, it's like, oh my God, it's like, is it jaundice? Is it this? Is it that? Is something going on? And I imagine, because sometimes ignorance is bliss, right? So like, even for me, like my wife is a physician, I'm not. So things that would have like come to her mind, like, and I'm there like, I didn't even know that existed, right? And so I imagine even from that standpoint, in your individual spaces as moms, as physicians, that's a very interesting thing to navigate, because you know, I always tell my wife, you know too much.
That my husband tells me that all the time. He's like, okay, I'm not one of your doctor friends. Talk to me like a regular person. And I'm like, but it's this, this, this. And so he's just like, no. And it does get us in that warped mental space at times too, because the common cold could look like pneumonia. But at the same time, I found that that could be a flip.
Yeah.
Right. Now that my son's a bit older, I take certain things lightly, because I'm just like, are you boy that's crying wolf? And like, and maybe I should be taking this more seriously.
Boy children is just different though.
So, I mean, there's two sides to the coin. But in that space, I think we were both able to. And so even, this is a caveat or a sidebar, but we therapize each other. So even though we work together as colleagues, we are actually very good friends. And so we make very intentional time to spend time together and like kind of
de-stress.
It's an intentional every Wednesday. We have our therapy session. So you define your tribe, get into the space of getting a therapist, even if it's just for your annual checks, just like you do a physical check, talking to someone, there should be no problem. So this is for men or women, like understanding that mental health is important.
I'll be honest, you know, I'm going to tread very lightly here as a man in this conversation. But I know, particularly after Asher was born, so that's our boy who's 1.5 now, that was difficult, even for me, because we tried to do as much of this as a tag team effort as possible. So when you talk about, like, navigating, like washing the bottles, doing this, keeping everything together in those early stages, that was rough. So I was working at the time in a very intense job from a time and a mental stretching and all that sort of stuff. So it's like navigating, trying to be helpful while figuring out, okay, you know, he had jaundice. And so you have that particular segment of time. You're trying to make sure all of that is working out properly. It's, like I said, obviously it's not the same thing as what you as a mom who went through that whole process and that now is dealing with it. But at the same time, I think sometimes it is difficult on men if they are trying to be actively engaged and involved in that process, because you tend to feel both the concern that your wife has for the baby, but then also your concern for your wife.
You brought up a very good point, because even though we're talking about in this specific segment, women's health, when the child is born, we negate a lot of times the mother, but at the same time, the fathers too. And so that's why in the last couple of minutes, I was talking about, in all aspects, we all need to check in and check in on our mental health, because even outside of pregnancy, outside of having a child, life is life. We are all going through some significant things in life. And so having that support, having the community, having a specialist specifically, you know, for mental health is very important. Yeah.
I hope you're enjoying this episode of Vital Voices. We're going to take a quick break for some words from our sponsors and we'll be right back.
Ladies, at Oak Tree Medical Center, your health is our priority. From early detection to advanced treatment options, Our comprehensive breast care services are here to support you every step of the way. With locations at East Street South, Prince Charles Drive, and our state-of-the-art surgical suites and MRI, top of the hill Mackey Street, we're right where you need us. Because when it comes to your breast care, you deserve the best care. And remember, the Million Mammogram movement continues. Call us today at 322-1145 or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com to learn more. Oak Tree Medical Center. Caring. Compassionate. Complete.
Pay your premiums anytime, anywhere, 24/7 with Galena's online payment portal. View payment history, set up recurring payments, download receipts for your life, health, auto, home, and marine policies. Got outstanding balances? Check them online and pay instantly. Guests can even pay for their loved ones' policies. Save time today by registering for fast, easy payments every time you log in. Visit Galena.com to pay today. Galena, always here, always open, 24/7.
Discover the ultimate in personalized healthcare with the Oak Tree Primary Plus program. Enjoy comprehensive primary care, annual physicals, lab and imaging discounts, mental health screenings, and more, all tailored to meet your health needs. With flexible payment options, exceptional care has never been more accessible. Join today and take control of your health journey. Call 816-4-OPP, that's 816-4677, or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com. Oak Tree Primary Plus. Are you down with OPP? Valor Security. Our brand is honor. With quality services and professional treatment, we provide security you can trust. Whether it's protecting your home, securing your business, or safeguarding schools and construction sites, we're here day and night to keep you safe. From private event security to personalized escorts and expert consultations, our team is committed to excellence. Choose Valor Security, where honor, professionalism, and peace of mind go hand in hand. Call us today at 359-2005 or 605-7424 for security solutions tailored to your needs. Gentlemen, it's time to take charge of your health with Oak Tree Medical Center. We provide comprehensive prostate care at affordable prices, from prostate-specific antigen tests to prostate ultrasounds to advanced prostate MRIs. We've got you covered. Need further evaluation or treatment? Oak Tree Surgical Suites offers biopsies and in-house surgery. Our team of experts is here for you every step of the way. Visit us at Oak Tree Medical Center on East Street South and Prince Charles Drive, or for surgical procedures, find us at Oak Tree Surgical Suites, top of the hill, Mackey Street. Call us today at 322-1145 or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com. Oak Tree Medical Center. Caring, compassionate, complete. Welcome back to Vital Voices. Let's continue our conversation. All right, so we're going to switch gears a little bit. One of the other interesting topics that's been trending a lot recently in the TikTok space and social media is this concept of PMDD, which is premenstrual dysphoric disorder. Obviously, I think you touched on it a little bit earlier.
I did.
This idea of, you know, PMS, I guess, where does PMS end and where does PMDD start, right? But what does distinguish one from the other, and, you know, I guess, what are some of the concerns that then stems out of the PMDD space?
Right. So, you know, PMS, as we mentioned before, a lot of these, the mood and emotions are under hormonal control. So with PMS, the changes in mood that may precede the onset of your menstrual cycle can involve the mood swings, the physical discomfort, because for some women, you start to cramp. So, of course, you're not in the best space. PMDD, on the other hand, is definitely more intense. So I'm sure all of us, excuse me, all of us in the room. No, but Alexis as well may have seen, going up through high school, there are some females that during that time of the month, they don't even want to come to school, or they don't come to school, or they're in the nurse's office, because it's definitely more intense, not just physical discomfort, but the mood changes. Some persons actually experience severe depression and anxiety during this part, which is much different from PMS, where there's just a change in mood. You feel a little bit down, but you could still function.
Right.
PMDD can sometimes be debilitating. So that's where the switch lies. Similar to when we say, okay, with, you know, baby blues, and then there's postpartum depression, where you actually have signs and symptoms of a depressive episode. So PMDD is quite similar to that. And in some cases, it can be so bad that women can have, you know, the end result of depression, which is having suicidal thoughts.
What are some of the underlying biological or psychological factors? So obviously, you said, like you said, not every woman, you know, ventures all the way into PMDD. A lot of them sit in PMS, and some of them don't have any real symptomatic issues.
Some of them don't have no real period.
Right. But what are some of the underlying components or factors that contribute to somebody ending up having PMDD as opposed to PMS or not having anything?
So with PMDD, the biological aspect of it is not truly fully understood, but we understand that with the menstrual cycle, the hormones that are typically involved are progesterone and estrogen. And so those play a part, and I think we touched on it when it pertained to postpartum depression, where they have a framework on, you know, the neurotransmitters in the brain that influence serotonin. And so it's the same kind of framework that we touched on earlier. And these, you know, affect how the person will function, the woman will feel if these levels are unbalanced.
Right.
And so with that, you know, you have your genetic predispositions as well. So people that have already been having symptoms and signs of depression, had a family member that had depression or they were going through it themselves, and your psychological factors. So heightened sensitivity, heightened to stress and those type of things. So we do have clients, I have a few, that we do start on medications for that because it is an imbalance of the serotonin. So we're going to use the same antidepressant that's going to help regulate that mood as well.
So I think we kind of get an idea of some of the symptoms of it as well. So how does it affect relationships, work, overall quality of life? Because I imagine that's a space where, you know, we've seen on TV and in media from we were children, you always have like this presentation of PMS, things like that. But obviously this sounds like it takes it a much step further. So how does PMDD affect people, women, when they go into their everyday life?
So it definitely reduces the quality of life. So think about it now. If you have someone that is dealing with an ailment, and let's say if you have a relapse of that ailment once or twice during the year, imagine that PMDD is something that is happening every month on cue. So just the cyclical nature of the symptoms is already stress in and of itself. And then
you know it's coming.
And sometimes anticipating what you are about to experience in another few weeks is stressful. So leading up to that time, you're stressed and you're anxious. And you're like, I know, I look at the calendar. And I know that this particular thing is happening and I'm going to be on my period and this is not going to go well. So it affects your quality of life in that way. And then we look at productivity at work. This is a time, this is a block of my work month that I won't be able to function. And if I do show up to work, my ability to give what I usually give is going to be significantly decreased. So there's decreased productivity. And then in your personal relationships, especially if you have a spouse, if you have a partner, you have kids, other family members that you interact with, they see the change in your emotions. You're irritable, you're snappy. For some persons, you may be crying out of the blue. It's a lot. So it's a lot for you to deal with emotionally. And then the persons around you, they feel that. So never negate the fact that when someone is dealing with depression, depression not only affects you, but it affects your loved ones. Because, I mean, how can I really be joyous and happy when every couple weeks you're down in the pits?
Right. It's funny, you know, like I said, it is something that's kind of trending right now. There's a lot of content out there on it. I saw one or two. There's this thing where women are saying, you know, they got to start telling themselves, I don't make any serious decisions when I know that that's where I am in time, because they don't know what kind of decisions they make. They don't know if they get divorced. They don't know if they quit their job. Right. Like, they don't know any of that. And so it is interesting because you speak to just how impactful and how deep into their life it can resonate. You mentioned medication, but what is the spectrum of treatment options for women who are suffering from PMDD and how effective are they?
So again, we use the umbrella. So the biopsychosocial model. So medications, we have the SSRIs, SNRIs. So there are whole lots of classes of medications that we can use that affect serotonin, the dopamine, the different pathways in the brain. So those are the pharmacological methods. Psychological is the same, CBT, the other types of, you know, psychological therapies and interventions that we can use to help, you know, regulate this person's thoughts. before we even get back, let me circle back to the biological. Some doctors can prescribe hormonal changes or treatments as well. So being on the pill, so to regulate the periods, making them less intense, mm-hmm. those type of things can also help in terms of the biologics. Right. So it has to work in tandem, the psychiatrist along with the obstetrics gynecologist
right.
to make sure that this woman is, because it's not just one thing. Mm-hmm. And that's why in terms of specialties, we are, yes, separate branches, but we are one big tree, right? And so the person is a whole. And so you have to think of this person as a whole network where everybody's working in tandem to make sure that this person is functioning mm-hmm. to the best place that they are. And the social is the same support as before. So basically the biopsychosocial model, same right. treatments as we kind of discussed earlier.
Right. And I think Alexis had alluded to, you know, additional things that can be done. So we do like to talk about medication and therapy, but then there are also lifestyle modifications mm-hmm. that can be made. So you mentioned that on TikTok, a lot of the girls would say, well, you know what, I can't make no major decisions. Mm-hmm. So if you know, the good thing about it is for some persons, your periods, you can kind of predict when it's about to come. So if you know that you have certain things, like when we planned for the date of this podcast, mm-hmm. if I was someone that was struggling with PMDD, I would say, well, you know what? That podcast can't be this week because this is my off week. So let's put it for this week. So you can kind of plan your life mm-hmm. around it. So yes, it's difficult trying to navigate every single date and time and every detail, but these are some of the things that can help you to function. So if you need a block off week, you need a block off week. Nothing major during that time. And you kind of find ways to work around yeah. charting, you know.
You your use moves. Knowledge as power, right?
Right.
So you mentioned earlier, sometimes people, they know that it's coming and they get pre-down about it. But it's like, use that knowledge to kind of, as best as you can,
right.
structure your life in a way that makes sense.
Right. Mm-hmm. Diet and exercise, too, I think, play yeah. a role as well. Mm-hmm. Because there are a lot of research. TikTok.
Mm-hmm. Let's not please present TikTok as a research platform.
The TikTok, I have a friend, I won't call her name, but she calls TikTok New York Times. So if ever you hear her say,
gosh.
Well, I learned this from the New York Times.
She's talking about TikTok.
She's talking about TikTok.
That's
so hilarious. I mean, we say that social media is bad, but it's how you utilize it, right? Mm-hmm. So there are nuggets yeah. through in anything that you do right. use.
Some things are inaccurate.
Right.
Just go fact check.
Yeah.
Fact check. Go
vet
it.
Yeah.
Right. So at the end of the day, there are certain diets that can help regulate mm-hmm. your hormones. Mm-hmm. Exercise is always a given, and that's just for healthy life, right? Yeah. And so there are things and tips and tools that you can look for online that can help regulate your mood a little bit better. That can help with some of these symptoms.
Sometimes
as well.
It's just getting sunlight. Like literally just getting outside of the four walls. Yeah.
We have that for $3.99 in the Bahamas.
Oh boy. So you mentioned, I think both of you in different ways have mentioned knowing. Obviously, it can have a good and a bad effect. But would you recommend that women who have started to realize that this is an issue, would you recommend that they track their cycles? And then what are the benefits of tracking that in terms of better understanding their mood, their energy, how those things fluctuate depending on or being related to their PMDD?
Most definitely. Tracking is very important. We say knowledge is power. The more information that you do have, the better. Like, you don't want to stick your head in the sand like an ostrich. So at the end of the day, there are apps out there for everything.
I have one.
There's a tracking app for your menstrual cycle. I love an app that's called a journal app. It's not on, I'm going to throw some shade to the Android users. It's not on Android, but I'm sure they have their own.
We do have our own
app for the journal app, but there's an app called Journal, and I feel like it's really good. I have a lot of my patients use it because it gives you little cues to journal, little reminders, and it helps regulate your mood a little bit better. Mm-hmm. So there are different things that you can utilize that can help you track, help you regulate your mood, and help your cycle as well.
Okay. Like you say, knowledge is power, right? You try to use it to your benefit as opposed to just staring it down the barrel and be like, oh my God, this is just going to be hell. So you mentioned the importance of tracking. And then you've spoken to lifestyle changes. Is there anything else that women can do in trying to better navigate mood and energy changes during their cycle, or if they are suffering from PMS or PMDD, what other lifestyle changes may be out there? What other coping strategies may be out there to help alleviate those symptoms?
So, I think we all mentioned, like you said, the fact that awareness is key. So being aware of what your mood changes may be, when they may start to occur, helps you to plan better. And a lot of times, garnering the support from people around you. So if I know that I really can't avoid doing something during this time period, and this may be bad for me, mm-hmm. reaching out to get support in advance, not just waiting until I'm in crisis, I'm not able to function. So damage control, and I can't stress that enough. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I think for a lot of people, acceptance. Mm-hmm. So accepting that maybe this is an issue. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's platforms like these that help us to get the word out there, because there are probably some people that go through this and they don't even know that it's a condition. They don't know that this is something that I can kind of get on top of. This is something that I can get help for.
Yeah, I think it's important because, you know, like I said, it's trending, but in preparing for this was kind of the first time that I started to even hear or understand a bit better about what PMDD was. Because, like, as a man, it's PMS, and that's what it's always been, just because, again, that's what we've seen in media and movies and TV and stuff like that. So to start to understand some of the effects and impacts and just how debilitating, I think that was the word you used, just how debilitating it can be. And I think it's helpful to have conversations that break the stigma. You know, I've had a number of different conversations and platforms like this with other members of the mental health profession, both on the psychiatry side and the psychology side. And I think the concept of trying to get rid of the stigma around mental health and mental health challenges, disorders, issues is very, very important, because then you can actually get help. And I think it was either last year or year before, you know, the theme for the year was mental health is health too. And I appreciate that. And I feel like I remember talking with somebody, it's like, that should just be the lifetime theme.
I agree.
Just, you know, you want people to understand that they are a whole person and their mind is a part of their health and their wellness.
I attribute the mind to being the engine. If the engine of your car goes, throw it in the garbage.
Yeah.
Right?
You know, nothing.
Like, a person is declared dead when they're mentally dead. Like, your heart can go, you can get a transplant for that. Your liver can go, you can get a transplant for that. If your brain goes, that is you. Like, yeah. That is it. Like,
brain
that is
dead.
All, your brain dead.
Brain dead is brain dead.
Yeah. So at the end of the day, protect your mind. Like, I feel like we have lessened it so much. And that goes to mental health. Like, it's a part of your body. Mm-hmm. So, like, we need to start from the top and trickle down. I mean, even in the profession, our colleagues, people in general, our community, I think we're bridging a path now since COVID. And that's the one thing I do attribute to COVID, that since having the pandemic, the New York Times has promoted mental health and the importance of psychiatry and having a mental health professional, mm-hmm. a psychologist, and, you know, understanding that your mental health is health too. And that actually helps you as a whole, because if you're not well mentally, that breaks down your other systems. Yeah. You're not functioning. You get sick quicker. Mm-hmm. You're not functioning at work. So, I mean, all of those play a part.
Listen, I saw something where they were talking about, you know, when you start to get into things like depression and stuff like that, it's like you don't bathe and you don't brush your teeth. And then it was like somebody went down the pathway of, well, if you're not brushing your teeth every day, and then it's like the bacteria and all of that starts to build up, and then that can affect your heart health. And I'm like, but it speaks to your point, the idea that, you know, if this one thing can lead to things like that, and then that has this entire sequelae that can come out of it, it's like, okay, you really have to make sure that we are talking about these things and treating them and giving people help. I hope you're enjoying this episode of Vital Voices. We're going to take a quick break for some words from our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
Ladies, at Oak Tree Medical Center, your health is our priority. From early detection to advanced treatment options, our comprehensive breast care services are here to support you every step of the way. With locations at East Street South, Prince Charles Drive, and our state-of-the-art surgical suites and MRI, top of the hill Mackey Street, we're right where you need us. Because when it comes to your breast care, you deserve the best care. And remember, the Million Mammogram movement continues. Call us today at 322-1145 or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com to learn more. Oak Tree Medical Center. Caring. Compassionate. Complete.
Pay your premiums anytime, anywhere, 24/7 with Galena's online payment portal. View payment history, set up recurring payments, download receipts for your life, health, auto, home, and marine policies. Got outstanding balances? Check them online and pay instantly. Guests can even pay for their loved ones' policies. Save time today by registering for fast, easy payments every time you log in. Visit Kalina.com to pay today. Kalina, always here, always open, 24/7.
Discover the ultimate in personalized healthcare with the Oak Tree Primary Plus program. Enjoy comprehensive primary care, annual physicals, lab and imaging discounts, mental health screenings, and more, all tailored to meet your health needs. With flexible payment options, exceptional care has never been more accessible. Join today and take control of your health journey. Call 816-4-OPP, that's 816-4677, or visit OakTreeMedicalCenter.com. Oak Tree Primary Plus. Are you down with OPP? Valor Security. Our brand is honor. With quality services and professional treatment, we provide security you can trust. Whether it's protecting your home, securing your business, or safeguarding schools and construction sites, we're here day and night to keep you safe. From private event security to personalized escorts and expert consultations, our team is committed to excellence. Choose Valor Security, where honor, professionalism, and peace of mind go hand in hand. Call us today at 359-2005 or 605-7424 for security solutions tailored to your needs. Gentlemen, it's time to take charge of your health with Oak Tree Medical Center. We provide comprehensive prostate care at affordable prices, from prostate-specific antigen tests to prostate ultrasounds to advanced prostate MRIs. We've got you covered. Need further evaluation or treatment? Oak Tree Surgical Suites offers biopsies and in-house surgery. Our team of experts is here for you every step of the way. Visit us at Oak Tree Medical Center on East Street South and Prince Charles Drive, or for surgical procedures, find us at Oak Tree Surgical Suites, top of the hill, Mackey Street. Call us today at 322-1145 or visit OakTreeMedicalCenter.com. Oak Tree Medical Center, caring, compassionate, complete. Welcome back to Vital Voices. Let's continue our conversation. All right, so as we wrap up, you know, what message would you guys like to share with women who might be struggling either with postpartum depression or PMDD, but are hesitant to seek help?
So again, we recognize that there are limitations to everything, but not just for women specifically. I think we need to, as a community, understand that mental health is important. Mm-hmm. And so breaking the stigma, understanding that there are resources out there for you, if you feel as though you aren't doing 100% you, mm-hmm. if you're recognizing that this person is not well, so that talks to you as a community, mm-hmm. recognizing your neighbor, recognizing your loved one, recognizing your person, not just saying you're not well, you need to go, maybe taking that person with you to the doctor's office. Right. And again, going back to my original point, this should be an annual physical for you. Going to see a psychiatrist should be like a part of your annual checkup. So recognizing the signs will be early, because now you're having a conversation with your therapist, your psychologist, and they can see that there are certain things that you need to, you know, work on.
And I want to add that sometimes we have to be our own advocate. Mm-hmm. So you know when things are not right. If you think that something is not right with you physically, you're going to go to the doctor and you're going to mention it. So if you feel like something is not right with you emotionally, even if you don't take the step of saying, I'm going to see a psychologist or a psychiatrist, tell your primary care provider, well, hey, these are the symptoms that I'm having. And then, you know, our urge would be for primary care providers to then take the next step and refer those persons that could benefit from the additional help. So never be afraid to discuss things, even discussing things in your friend circles. Because mm-hmm. sometimes you think that you're alone and you're not. You may start to say, well, during my period, listen to me, my mood goes to the gutter. And your friend may be like, girl, me too.
That exact part too, though. Mm-hmm. The thing is, I feel like for so long, women have suffered in silence. And mm-hmm. that's for PMDD, for postpartum depression. There are so many women going through the same mm-hmm. struggles. And I think, thanks to the New York Times, the things are getting out there a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But there are so many women suffering, so that you don't have to. There are resources out there Talk to your friends about what you're going through. Don't just assume that, whoa, it's me. Only me is going through this. Mm-hmm. Having that conversation can open the door for you to get help.
And you can provide the resources. Right. You share lifestyle tips and tricks. Right. Things that have worked for you may work for your friend, and things that have worked for your friend may be like, oh, okay, I could start doing that too.
Right.
So I think the last question before we close, you know, how do we then, you know, reduce the stigma around mental health challenges broadly, and then especially as it relates to women's health, women's reproductive health?
This is the first step. Okay. Knowledge. Mm-hmm. Having the information out there. Platforms like this are so important. Education, because it gives the opportunity to have these types of conversations. Mm-hmm. It breaks the stigma, it normalizes it. Something that we talk about, suicide, is it better to talk about it or not talk about it? Ask about it. It's always better to ask. It's always better to talk about it, because if you don't have the knowledge on how to get the resources, what opportunities you have available, mm-hmm. then you can't get the help that you need. Yeah. So I think the knowledge, the education is the first step for sure.
And then to add to that, sharing personal stories helps to normalize the experience. Yeah. So a lot of times when people see us and they start to talk about things, they would start with a disclaimer. Well, I'm not crazy. Okay, well, nobody's saying that you're crazy. Like, why are we going there?
Right.
Like, I hear what you're saying about what you experienced. Do you know that I experienced that too? Mm-hmm. And then it feels more like, okay, well, this is safe for me to kind of disclose what I'm going through. So normalizing these shared experiences helps, again, you mentioned community. It helps you to feel like there is community. And I do feel comfortable talking about what I've experienced because I'm not the only one.
Yeah. Now, I think it's an interesting thought as we close out. You know, we have a lot of support groups for a lot of different things in the health space. You have groups for like breast cancer support. You have groups for diabetes, groups for this, that, and the third. I mean, perhaps there's an opportunity to start a defined support group for women who are struggling with either or both of these issues, because like you said, you don't want people to be suffering in silence. And then I think there's also an opportunity for us to revisit this conversation, perhaps with some of your patients who might be interested and willing to tell their story in a different, maybe sort of a different format, to help, again, give life to this idea that you're not alone. There are people who are suffering and perhaps share some of their, like you said, well, this is what I do. And help to kind of further normalize the conversation and then give people an additional layer of help. Obviously, we always want people to come and seek professional help as a part of that platform. But knowing that there are others like you that you can even start that conversation with, who can then encourage you to take that next step, is also helpful.
Right. That's why when we collabed to say we're going to do this topic, I was just like, perfect, because this is such an important topic that's not being discussed.
Right.
And so to your point of having these support groups, which would be so important, it starts with having the conversation too, and recognizing, hey, you are not alone. There are others like you. Maybe I could put it together and we can engage.
Right.
We can talk about it and build a network of the community that we need.
Beautiful.
Obviously, you want to give people an opportunity to find out how and where they can engage with you both. You mentioned up front that you are both working out of Oaktree Medical Center as well as Sandlands Rehabilitation Center. So how can anyone get in contact with you? They've listened to this. They feel like they're dealing with either postpartum depression, PMDD, or something else in the mental health space. How do they get in contact with you guys to set up a visit?
So I am currently at the Oaktree East Street location. So that is on East Street South. In the plaza by Dunkin' Donuts. So they can call the number there.
825-4674.
Right. So make an appointment and they'll let you know when's best for sure. Mm-hmm. And then my colleague.
I'm Dr. Johnson Dames speaking, and I am also at East Street South, but also at the specialty clinic on Collins Avenue. So that number is 802-9951. Or we can be contacted via email if you have a specific question or concern. Mine is drjohnsondames@oaktreemedicalcenter.com.
I am drknowles@oaktreemedicalcenter.com. So you can find me. You can send me an email. You can make the appointment through the office. That's typically best, so that they can just book you one time and give you all the relevant information.
And the numbers that we shared are WhatsApp numbers as well. So if you don't necessarily want to talk to a human,
or you don't get through to the human,
yeah,
when you do call, you can send a WhatsApp message.
So I want to thank you both for taking time out of your busy schedule to have this conversation with us today. It's a very good conversation, very enlightening for me. And I hope it's also enlightening for our listeners. So thank you both so much.
Thanks for having us.
And so that's all for today's episode of Vital Voices. Again, a heartfelt thank you to our guests, Dr. Knowles Robinson and Dr. Johnson Danes, for sharing their expertise on postpartum depression, PMDD, and the broader mental health impacts of the menstrual cycle.